Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a big docket, so let's get right to it. First, new video released in the Chris Watts matter. You got to watch this. Second, has Judge Boyce been watching Crime Talk? Juror number 50 in the Ghislaine Maxwell case? Honest mistake? Well, that's what the government is saying. First of many to join Alec Murdoch in custody. I told you this was bigger than just old Alex Murdoch. A case of let it go, maybe? An example of it's always about the money. What would you do if a student threw a chair at you? We can show you what one substitute teacher did. An update in regards to the Taylor Shaw business case. You know, the lady that was engaged in sexual activities with her boyfriend and she strangled him and then chopped him up into a lot of pieces. Yeah, we got an update on that one. Have you heard about a honey trapper? It's all the rage. All the cool kids are doing it. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk. My name is Scott Reich. Before we open the record, first, today is Wednesday, March 16th, 2022. Now, before we get to the docket, we got to do the housekeeping. First, if you haven't already done so, hit that subscribe button. Hit that little bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And for those that follow us, you know we had a pretty good time last night on our After Dark, which is every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Mountain Time, and we go live. And then we did our Patreon show. So if you missed that, you're out of luck. Only way you can see it is if you're a Patreon. All right, before we move on to the docket, we need to hear from today's sponsor, Baked in Colorado. Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked. Okay, let's get to the docket for March 16th, 2022. Let's open the record. First, Chris Watts. I know, just when you think you are done hearing about this guy, something else comes up. Well, there's been some new video released, and guess who it's the video of? Well, Nicole Kessinger, if that's her real name. And of course, we know it's not, because as you may recall, she changed her name and went into hiding, and yours truly actually was going to go to her name change court appearance, but somehow they got word of it and they changed it and then they sealed it. So we'll never know Chris Watts' mistress's new name, or her old new name for the old name. You know what I'm saying, Nicole Kessinger. Anyway, well, what the new video shows is that it shows video footage how he, Chris Watts, lied to Nicole Kessinger via text when she begged for the truth about whether he, in fact, had killed his wife and daughters. And for those of you not familiar with this, Chris Watts pled guilty to killing his wife, Shanann, where he stated that he had strangled her and then smothered his two young daughters, Bella 4 and Celeste 3, whereupon he drove them to an oil where he drove them to an oil tank feeder where there's wells as well as tanks to hold oil. And he buried Shanann just north of that particular site. And then he shoved those two little girls into a oil tank which had oil in it, and he had to literally put the little babies through a hole about that big. It's absolutely terrifying if you really think about it. Anyway, so Nicole Kessinger, she stated that she cooperated with the police days after Chris Watts was arrested. And Ms. Kessinger met him at work, obviously, and they had an affair for about 2 months. And in their last texts, Chris Watts denied having anything to do with the disappearance. Now, as I stated, Kessinger has since changed her name, gone into hiding, although several people close to Chris Watts state that they have been in contact as of recently as last year, but color me skeptical on that. And Chris Watts, like I said, did plead guilty. He was 36 at the time, and he is serving a 5 consecutive life sentences plus 48 years, and he has been transferred up to a prison in Wisconsin. Now you're saying to yourself, well, Scott, get to the video. Well, I just told you the highlights of the video. If you want to watch the video in its entirety, you just have to hit the link. And it is 3.5 hours long. But I urge you to watch it in its entirety. We thought about chopping it up, but we want you all to have all the information so that you can make up your own mind. I know there's some people out there that say, oh, she was involved. I don't think there's any evidence to show that she was involved. Certainly, if the police thought she was involved, they would have charged her. They haven't. And obviously, we give everybody the presumption of innocence here. And frankly, I don't think there's any evidence for her to be charged. And if something changes, let me know. But nothing's happening just yet. But I think it's worth watching the video. It's a long one, so get some popcorn, all right? And then when you get done watching that, you should go watch all of the videos we have related to Chris Watts going back to the beginning, because we were one of the first channels that covered it from the beginning. We discussed the plea. We even discussed, well, when the fact they said they added it on, I said, they must have reached a plea bargain. Bam, who called it? Anyway, all right, let's move on to the docket. How about some Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell? I'm starting to think that Judge Boyce is maybe watching Crime Talk. Just last night, I was saying that I hope the judge denies any motions to continue because, well, frankly, this case is getting a little long in the tooth and needs to move along. Well, guess what? Judge Boyce actually did that. He denied the government's motion to continue the motions hearing set in regards to the motion to sever, as well as the motion to reconsider the transfer of the venue from Ada County back to Fremont County. So those are set for this Friday at 9:30 a.m. on the motion to sever, and then at 11 a.m., the change of venue hearing. And it's great. The judge states in his order that this case has gone on. These motions have been pending for some time. We're going to have a hearing because, frankly, I don't have any other time on my docket to reschedule this stuff, which is why I was getting a little concerned. If they keep continuing this stuff, it's just another reason to continue the trial and everything should be moving forward. So good on George, good on Judge Boyce. All right, let's move on to Ghislaine Maxwell. As you may recall, Ghislaine Maxwell was found guilty in late December of last year in regards to the sex trafficking charges that she was facing. And then a juror number 50, stated to many press publications that he was in fact the victim of a sexual assault. The defense took issue with those interviews. Why? Because that particular juror stated that he had never been a victim of a sexual assault on his juror questionnaire. Now that juror, Scotty David, was going to invoke his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination, but the United States attorneys granted juror Scotty David immunity so that he could testify and the judge could hear the evidence. And then the court ordered that each party brief their position as it relates to whether Ms. Ghislaine Maxwell should get a new trial. Well, not surprising, the government's brief basically states that Judge David made an honest mistake, and there's no evidence that he was biased in any way. The prosecution said that the 8 potential jurors out of 58 who got through selection disclosed a history of sexual abuse, but were not excluded as a result. So therefore, they're saying that was not an automatic disqualification, and therefore it shouldn't be a big deal. Now, the defense, of course, is going to say, yes, but those other people disclosed that information and they were able then to discuss it further with them, whereas Mr. David did not. So the prosecution stated that after the thoughtful and thorough hearing held by this court, it is crystal clear that the defendant received a fair trial. Juror 50's sworn testimony at the hearing made evident that he did not deliberately lie in the completing the questionnaire in any way, but that he instead simply made an honest mistake. And in any event, had Juror 50 accurately reported his questionnaire that he had been a victim of sexual abuse, he would not have been struck for cause. Of course, they can't say that, and we'll have to see exactly what the defense filings state on that particular issue. Now, the court is still deciding what they're going to do as it relates to whether Ms. Maxwell gets a new trial. She's currently set for sentencing on June 28th. I've stated my position rather clearly as it relates to Mr. David's error. He stated it was because it was a noisy jury room and he must have gotten bored and just didn't realize what he was saying. But these questions are very clear. Have you or a family member ever been the victim of sexual assault? He put no twice. I don't think there's anything you could say. And the mere fact that he asserted his Fifth Amendment rights and asked for immunity clearly shows if it was not a mistake, he wouldn't have had to have asked for immunity. And now he won't be charged with perjury either. So we'll wait and see what the court does. But Mr. Juror number 50 has nothing further to worry about now. Let's talk Alex Murdaugh. Now, some people I know aren't interested in this story, but I have said from early on, and maybe it's because I love South Carolina, where this kind of all takes place, but I also have some familiarity with the good old boy network down there, so to speak. And I told you early on, there's no way that Alex Murdaugh could have done what he is accused of doing on his own. That many, many people had to have been involved, and many people knew exactly what he was doing, and they assisted him. Well, it is all starting to come together, so to speak. Now, the lawyer who represented the family of Alex Murdaugh's longtime housekeeper, well, after she died in a trip and fall accident in 2018, has been indicted for his participation in the scheme. That attorney is Corey Howerton Fleming, Alex Murdaugh's best friend and godfather to Buster Murdaugh, was indicted by the state grand jury last week, according to a news release from the South Carolina Attorney General. The two men were both charged last week with conspiring to surreptitiously give Murdaugh a share of the Fleming's fee from the multi-million dollar settlement of a civil claim against Murdaugh resulting from the death of Gloria Satterfield. The state grand jury also charged Murdaugh with three counts of false statements or misrepresentations in connection with an insurance transaction over $50,000. In total, Fleming has been indicted on 18 charges for defrauding victims of $3,622,431.95, while Alex Murdaugh has been indicted on a total of 75 charges for defrauding victims of more than $8,492,888.31. It's a lot of money. So far, Mr. Fleming is the first one of Murdaugh's alleged co-conspirators who have been charged for their involvement in Murdaugh's alleged financial schemes. A virtual bond hearing is scheduled for Mr. Fleming at 9 a.m. on Thursday morning in front of Judge Allison Lee, the same judge that set Mr. Murdaugh's bond at $7 million. We'll see if she is as generous to this now new co-defendant as she was with Mr. Murdaugh. We'll have to wait and see. And we've said it before, ladies and gentlemen, the threat of imminent incarceration tends to break the bonds of loyalty. So I would anticipate Mr. Fleming more than likely rolling, if he hasn't already done so, to save himself and tell everybody how the scheme actually worked and who else was involved. All right, let's move from the East Coast over to the West Coast, San Diego specifically. Maybe a case of let it go, kind of by everybody? So a California woman was shot dead by police as she stabbed a sheriff's deputy with a butcher's knife after threatening another officer with what appeared to be a different knife. So police body cam footage shows San Diego Sheriff's Deputy Jason Bunch serving 47-year-old Yan Lee with an eviction notice at her apartment unit on March 3rd. As Officer Bunch is handing over the eviction notice, he realizes she is holding what appears to be a cleaver or a butcher's knife. The officer pulls out his weapon and tells her to put her knife down or he is going to have to shoot. Now, the redacted video shows Lee asking Officer Bunch, "How could I know that you are not an intruder?" She throws the eviction papers on the floor and talks unintelligibly before slamming the door shut. Another officer attempted to talk to Miss Lee through the door for approximately 45 minutes with no success. The officers then barged inside her apartment using a spare key from the building's manager. Police said that there was probable cause to arrest Lee for assault with a deadly weapon and she posed a threat to public safety. Now, the woman was barricaded inside her bedroom holding a different large knife, and law enforcement officers who fired at Lee were identified by police as deputies Javier Medina and David Williams. Now, Sheriff's Sergeant Daniel Nickel and Officer Rogelio Medina were also present. The canine unit officer was stabbed in the chest by Lee, according to police. He was treated at the UC San Diego Medical Center and was discharged that same day. Now, the four officers who fired the shots have been placed on desk duty, which is normal protocol, and they appear to have initially shot Lee with less lethal beanbag bullets before repeatedly firing real bullets when she wasn't deterred. And it's all on the video, and then it shows Miss Lee bleeding through her clothes. So you kind of get a pretty good idea of what's taking place here. We'll put up a couple of screenshots. It's kind of a case of let it go. I mean, why couldn't Miss Lee just take the eviction paper and be done with it? Why couldn't the cops have just said she was served? We handed her with the eviction paperwork and just go and let it go. Sometimes people, everybody, just can't seem to let it go. There's an easy way and there's a hard way. Everybody always picks the hard way. Maybe that's why I'm so tired. It gets tired of always doing the hard way. Next, an example of it's always about the money. I know you guys are probably tired of hearing that, but I'm telling you, if you look at the 12 undeniable truths of life from a criminal defense attorney, well, it's always about the money. It's so true. Well, our example today is a BLM activist and her husband are accused of collecting approximately $33,426 in unemployment payments and using an unspecified amount of donation money to treat themselves to meals, going to Bubba Gump, Shrimp Company, vacations, and trips to the nail salon. Now, Monica Gannon Grant is 41 and her husband, Clark Grant, 38, of Taunton, T-A-U-N-T-O-N, Massachusetts. I'm sure it's pronounced like with a silent A or silent U or silent N or silent T. So I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. So somebody can let me know if we got that wrong. All right. In Massachusetts. And they founded the nonprofit organization called Violence in Boston. Well, they were charged in an 18-count indictment with wire fraud, conspiracy, and making false statements to a mortgage lending business. Now, Cannon Grant, who was once named Bostonian of the Year by the Boston Globe newspaper, has also allegedly paid herself $2,700 a week and treated herself to a $450,000 five-bedroom house in that same town of Taunton, Massachusetts. She is accused of using as much as $1 million raised by her nonprofit Violence in Boston for good causes. Now, her salary jumped from $25,000 in 2020 to $170,000 in 2021. Violence in Boston received significant attention at the height of the Black Lives Matter or BLM movement in 2020 when the murder of George Floyd by police bolstered the nation's racial justice movement. Now, Ms. Cannon Grant and her husband are said to have misappropriated grants intended for their charity, including a $6,000 check given to them by the Suffolk District Attorney's Office in June of 2019, intended to be spent on a retreat for young men feared to be at risk for falling into a life of crime. Instead, the money was allegedly spent on a $1,200 hotel stay in Maryland, complete with dinners with Bubba Gump's Shrimp Company and Shake Shack. Gannon Grant and her husband also fraudulently, allegedly, applied for $100,000 of federal pandemic unemployment assistance benefits that they knew they were not eligible to receive because they had other sources of income at the time, it's alleged. They also lied to mortgage lenders by saying Violence in Boston's assets were their own to help pay for mortgage fees and closing costs. Now, prior to Cannon Grant's arrival in court, her attorney, Robert Goldstein, said he expected her to be vindicated. He made the statements, "We are extremely disappointed the government rushed to judgment here. Violence in Boston and Monica have been fully cooperating and their production of records remains ongoing. Drawing conclusions from an incomplete factual record does not represent the fair and full informed process a citizen deserves from its government, especially someone like Monica, who has worked tirelessly on behalf of her community." Well, we'll give Monica the presumption of innocence as well as her husband, and we'll see what happens. Somehow, I think a plea will be entered, but you never know. We'll continue to follow the case. All right. What would you do if you were a substitute teacher and a student threw a chair at you? Well, let me give you an example of what one substitute teacher did. And he's an elderly substitute teacher at a Texas middle school. And he was left with a bloody face after a student threw a chair at him. So what did the substitute teacher do? He threw two chairs right back at the teenager. Now, a video of the incident is circulated on social media that shows the fight at the DeSoto West Middle School between Larry Brumfield and the teenager who was refusing to leave the classroom he was not supposed to be in. Brumfield added that the fight broke out after the teen perpetrator refused to leave the classroom with the teacher and student, then hurling foul-mouthed insults at one another. "Fortunately, I saw it out of my peripheral vision," Brumfield said, of the chair that struck him. "It hit my leg and my head. It didn't hurt as much, but I felt the blood on my face. I picked it up and threw it back at him." Now, near the end of the video, some students can even be heard yelling, "Stop!" while Brumfield gets closer to them to get a better angle at throwing the chair at the student. "Oh, he's bleeding," one girl yells at another student, realizing the substitute teacher was injured. Now, last Wednesday, the DeSoto Police Department said it's investigating the incident and it's still ongoing. Now, while reinforcements at the middle school were called for to prevent more violent outbreaks on campus, now classes were canceled the day after the fight, and spring break started one day earlier than expected. One school district representative said that several students started the fight first. Paramedics were eventually called to the school, where Brumfield was treated for his head injury. It remains unclear what started the wild brawl and whether any students would face disciplinary action for their behavior. Brumfield will not be forced into retirement. He said, "I came up from the ghettos of Gary, Indiana," which is kind of the suburbs of Chicago there, just across the river. "And I'm thinking as an idealist, I have some things up here I could share with people." He added that he needs the extra paycheck to raise both of his grandchildren who are currently living with him. And that there isn't a better place to work than in schools where he can give back and guide kids to find their paths. I can already see the comments now. The teacher should never have done anything at all. What is he doing? You should never, ever harm a student. Okay, let's get a couple things straight, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, in just about every jurisdiction that I'm possibly aware of, you have a right to impose corporal punishment, discipline upon your child. When your child goes to school under the law, the teacher, the school, takes over as the parent, and they can discipline them. Now, when I was going to school, they could still swat you on the butt with the paddle that the assistant principal had in his office. It was a real thing. I'm not sure that's exactly what we need today, but I'm just saying that's the law, okay? Now, if a student throws something at you, I think you have a right to defend yourself. I don't know why this kid was in the classroom that he shouldn't be in and why he didn't leave when he was asked to leave and then threw a chair at a teacher. But I don't know about you, but somehow I don't think being nice and polite to that little punk is gonna get things done. So maybe a chair back at him is what needs to take place. And this teacher A, it looks like he's trying to make a difference. He grew up hard times. Maybe he thought he could make a difference. Well, hopefully he won't get charged. But maybe a little more discipline in the schools and you can get a lot more done. If you talk to a lot of teachers, they say it'd be a lot easier if we could get rid of the poorly disciplined children so that the ones that actually want to learn can get an education. Just my two cents. All right. Next, an update on the Taylor Shaw business matter. As you may recall, she's the woman who was allegedly engaging in sexual activity with her boyfriend, whereupon some choking was involved. And then she continued to choke him to death. And then maybe she chopped him up into little pieces with some like bread knives because it was the most serrated edge that they had. Not my words, Miss Shaw business words when she confessed to the police, but we'll give her the presumption of innocence. Well, an attorney for Miss Taylor Shaw business has asked the court for a competency evaluation of the client. Now, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. This is what it takes to raise the issue of competency. The attorney stated, quote, "Based upon the discussion I've had with my client, I have concerns regarding her ability to understand these proceedings and to assist in her own defense." Sound familiar? Sound like something I've said? It's not Scott just making this stuff up. This is the law. Well, like I said, as you know, Ms. Shaw business, she's 24. She allegedly told the Green Bay police that she and Shad Therian smoked meth while spending the day together. And at about 3 a.m. on February 23rd, police responded to a call after Therian's mother discovered her son's severed head in a bucket in the basement. Police arrived and they found Shaw business with dried blood on her clothes and found a crock pot box in her van that contained additional human body parts, including legs. Police said they believed that Thyron was strangled before his body was mutilated. And per Ms. Shaw business's alleged account, she allegedly told police she didn't mean to kill him, but she did enjoy choking. And so she continued to do that. Now, Shaw business is charged with first-degree intentional homicide, mutilating a corpse, a third-degree sexual assault, and she's being held in the Brown County Jail for bond. Her bond has been set at $2 million. That's going to be a good one. I'm telling you, it's going to be a good one. I know. Some people are like, Scott, you sound too happy. I'm just telling you, you can't make this stuff up. It's going to be a good one, okay? All right, next in the docket, honey trapper. Have you heard that word before? Okay. It's all the rage. All the cool kids are doing it. This is probably why you want to check out crimetalksearch.com. Frank, insert crimetalksearch.com right here overward so everybody can see. It is dating malpractice to not check somebody out before you go meet them in the wee morning hours to have sex. All right, honey trapper. So 22-year-old Valerie Rosario is accused of setting a honey trap for a man she lured into her Bronx apartment with the intention of holding him for a $100,000 ransom. Now, the man thought he was headed to an Instagram hookup, but instead walked into a 24-hour torture ordeal. Rosario was part of a group of four who targeted the 24-year-old man after determining from his Instagram that he was wealthy. Rosario allegedly invited the stranger over to her home on February 7th at 1 a.m. after talking to him through Instagram. Shortly thereafter, he arrived. Rosario's crew burst into the room with guns, stripped the man naked, and poured flammable substances on him in the bathtub. The crew also reportedly stabbed him multiple times in the back, legs, and other parts of his body. After hours of this, the man was moved to a different location where he was forced to call his family to demand a ransom. They FaceTimed the victim's brother, demanding cash while continuing to torture the man with a knife. Police were able to track down the alleged kidnappers to a location in Queens where they were surrounded in a parked van. Inside, they said they found Javier Vargas. In the back of the van, they found the victim unconscious, wrapped in a blanket with tape covering his mouth and barely breathing. The victim was rushed to the hospital where he was treated for multiple burn and stab wounds to his face, body, back, and legs. Rosario was facing charges of kidnapping and attempted murder, which of course she denies. Her attorney asked that she be released on her own recognizance, pointing out that she lives with her mother and her brother and has a full-time job at a dentist's office. But the district attorney argued that someone who allegedly abducted a complete stranger and tortured him for 24 hours should be held without bail. The judge ordered that she was, in fact, should be remanded until the case is presented to the grand jury next week. The other three alleged accomplices were also remanded after being arrested and charged last week as well. Telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you got to be very cautious of people that you meet on the internet and go over to their house at 1 a.m. for a hookup, okay? This is nothing new. I cannot tell you how many cases where I've seen where an attractive female meets a guy at a club, and then they say, why don't you come over to my house? Whereupon the boyfriend and his buddies are either in the house or in the bushes and then rob the individual right there. This has been going on for centuries, ladies and gentlemen. It is nothing new. But yet everybody acts like it'll never happen to them. You got to be careful. You got to be so careful. All right. And then finally today, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And finally today on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Please meet Kathy Kidd. Now, she's seen here in her mugshot wearing a dumb shirt, which apparently to her stands for Don't Understand My Brain. Now, Ms. Kidd is 64 years old from Georgia, and she was arrested last month on a warrant charging her with battering a female relative. Police say Kidd and two other women punched and kicked the 41-year-old victim, who is the mother of Kidd's granddaughter. You gotta love that. Now, Kidd is free on a $2,000 bond, was scheduled to be arraigned yesterday on the misdemeanor battery count. But you gotta love the shirt, dumb. You, in fact, are dumb. Beating up your own grandkid's mom at 61? Have you learned nothing over your 61 years of life? Apparently not, and that's dumb. I'm glad you got the shirt. Maybe we should come up with something like that. All right. Thanks for watching. It was a big docket. Let's go ahead and close the record. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.